ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. We are days away, just a little over a week away from the start of the NBA season, and it's time to talk about, well, not only preview that season and what we're expecting, but also, hey, what are some, if you're one of the people out there, the many, many people out there who like to put a little wager on games, where's some smart preseason money? Where can you make some money long term? I wanted to bring in Drew Dinsick, who works with us at NBC Sports. You can find him on Twitter at Whale Capper and, like, I don't know, like 18 other social media places, right, Drew? Like everywhere.
Yeah, it's been it's been a fun ride, and getting to talk NBA, it sneaks up on you every year. But yeah, here we are on the eve of the season, and there are more interesting storylines than years past that I can remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is a. It feels like this is as good as it gets, you know, in terms of the NBA being the key focus in the world of sports. You have a perfect transition right now between a class of superstars who are at the very tail end of their careers, the LeBrons, the Kevin Durants of the world, the Currys of the world, who are kind of still hanging on at or around their peak. And then you have the new wave who have come in. And then on top of that, now we get to mix in the uncertainty of some truly dynamic rookies. And so this is, it's kind of, my expectations for entertainment factor for this season are sky high. I think breaking it down from the lens of, you know, what can we expect? You know, how do we want to attack this from a betting perspective? Those are the key questions I'm asking myself right now. So excited to kind of talk through this and get some of your perspective as well.
Looking forward to it. And obviously you can tell Drew, I love having Drew on because he just knows the game. This isn't like, he's trying to make some money. We'd all like to make some money, but like he just knows and loves the game. And always leads to a fun conversation. In fact, we'll start with some of that uncertainty because I spent most of my yesterday and this morning and frankly a little time before that trying to write out my Philadelphia 76ers season preview, and I literally put this off as long as I could because I was hoping there would be some sort of resolution, some sort of direction, and it's just a weird situation because Tyrese Maxey's looked great in the preseason. He looks like a guy ready to take a step forward, and I think he looks better in Nick Nurse's offense with more motion. He's got the ball in his hands. The back spasms he had the other night didn't seem to be too serious. Like, there's so much to like, and yet there's this large Harden-shaped cloud hanging over this team this year that in an East with two teams in an arms race, it's like, I don't think I want to go near them.
Yeah. Sixers are kind of the perfect place to start because of that question. And I think you framed it well. The youth movement that, you know, the talent that they've put around Embiid here looks really, really good on paper. Tobias Harris still has something left in the tank. Kelly Oubre Jr. is kind of a nice mutable piece. Maxey definitely looks like he's ready to take a step forward. Melton, even as a shooting guard, looks like he's got a relatively high ceiling, at least from a fantasy production standpoint this year. I've heard a lot of people make a strong case for him for, you know, sixth man of the year potential. You know, you have the reigning MVP in Joel Embiid, who's kind of the key focus and the anchor, and the Harden-shaped cloud is a good way to put it. My assumption is he's not going to play for the Sixers this year. I don't think they're in expecting him to, you know, kind of come in and force his way out the way he did in Houston. I think they're just going to let him, you know, basically voluntarily sit out until they can find a deal that suits them. But it was interesting the way that the offseason played out, and all, you know, you can agree or disagree here, but the power always was in the hands of the player forever, for as long as I can remember. You know, going back to the construction of the big three in Miami, you know, like that was conceived of the players, you know, kind of genesis and executed behind closed doors by the players. And this summer, it was pretty clear that Dame Lillard wanted to go play for the Miami Heat. And that did not happen. And that was a little bit of a power shift in terms of who's making calls. And when you look at the haul, ultimately, that the Blazers got, now it's not going to help the Blazers win games this year. But boy, oh boy, feels like they got about $1.20, $1.25 for Dame Lillard. And this is the first time in my life I can remember a team trading a superstar and getting a dollar for dollar or more back. And so I think this gives Morey a little bit of just an incentive. Like, hey, if you wait for it, the deal will come. Like, there's going to be some desperate team out there that's looking at Harden not getting used and decides, you know, hey, we're going to make a better offer than whatever the Clippers were offering. And, you know, if Harden doesn't want to go and play there, then so be it. But, you know, if you can negotiate with him behind doors, you know, closed doors to get paid, I think that's ultimately what he wants more than chasing a championship. So I think somebody's going to come to the table and give them a fair offer there. And then that could be something that helps them continue to build in the future or helps them win this year. And, you know, without knowing what the answer is there, my guess is going to be more like future pieces than anything that it's going to help them build this year. And so you kind of have to look at their preseason roster, including Embiid and maybe some PJ Tucker, and assume that that's what you got with Philly this year. And, you know, I think on paper, that's pretty clearly the third best team in the East.
I will counter that. I think it could be Cleveland. I'm just higher on Cleveland than others. I think adding Max Strus, I mean, this was a 51-win team a year ago. They add Max Strus, but I think the real question there, and this is one of those you can't really prove it till the postseason type of situations, did they learn lessons? Did they about... You know, I guess it's A, how much do you believe in Donovan Mitchell? And then B, did they learn lessons about taking their opponent, the focus and the attention to detail and the intensity that comes with playoff basketball, because the Knicks brought that and the Cavaliers didn't. Are they just not capable of that, or did they learn a lesson? I'm leaning into learned a lesson, but, you know.
I think you can actually kind of divorce the question because, you know, in large part right now what we're looking at is regular season success.
Yeah.
And they proved that they can answer that to the good, even, you know, in the first year with Donovan Mitchell in house. And, you know, they had one of the quieter off seasons, not a lot of moving parts, but considering how much you're asking from your young players, that's probably good. Maybe, you know, if you get a fully healthy season from Darius Garland and, you know, Mobley continues to develop as superstar talent, then we could be talking about decent head-to-head there for who even wins that division, in my opinion. The Central Division is right now priced like the Bucks have already won, and if there's anything that, you know, I took away from the Dame Lillard trade, it was like, wow, this Bucks team clearly raised their potential to win a title this year, because this is now, you know, a little bit more of a complete half court offense in, you know, in a 6-7, you know, game 6, game 7, you know, some of the stagnation that we've seen with the Bucks in years past is potentially answered by having Lillard on the floor as a creator. That doesn't really help them in the regular season, though, because they have completely cleaned out the depth in this team. And, you know, I'm assuming that there are maybe still moves to be made to help fortify some of the deeper parts of this roster. But we're looking at right now, like, there's going to be a lot of minutes from a lot of guys who don't necessarily belong on, you know, an Eastern Conference champion contender, who are going to have to backfill here until things get kind of worked out in terms of depth here. So, do the Bucks start slow? Do they leave the door open for the Cleveland Cavaliers to steal the Central? I think that's a very, very fair question to ask as we sit here on the eve of the season. And the price would lean me in the direction of taking a shot on the Cavs. If they do put it together, if everybody takes a step forward together, if Bickerstaff is, you know, the coach we know he can be in the regular season, can the Cavs win 55 games? Sure, absolutely. That's, they don't not even need to win 55 in order to win the Central if you know, the Bucks are losing games because they need to give Giannis some time off, or Middleton's not really ready to go at full speed out of the gate, or, you know, the turns out some of the pieces they thought could contribute really aren't good enough to be on the floor for 20 minutes a game. So, you know, there could be some growing pains certainly for the Bucks that could leave the door open for the Cavs. So I like that take by you, and plus 270 is a pretty darn good price to you know, to at least be in the head to head with the Bucks throughout the, you know, the balance of the season.
I will say I did see the Bucks in person. By the way, you're discounting the great sixth man of the year campaign from Grayson Allen. But I did see the Bucks in person. I was at the game that Lillard and Giannis played, and you know, Lillard said afterwards, it just makes the game so simple. The amount of spacing Giannis gets when Lillard is one pass away, it's just, I think, even again, it's preseason, but you can see he's like, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to having this much room to move, let alone Lillard kind of getting the same, because it's like, it was weird. It's a preseason game. They're like, they blitzed me. They, you know, they blitzed me on the first play with two guys. And I'm like, it's the preseason, but okay. He's like, so my release valve is Giannis. They're going to be, they're going to be really dangerous to work with.
Ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The other one I'm curious, NBA awards, that's a tricky thing to bet, but Evan Mobley has a legitimate shot at Defensive Player of the Year, and if you think so, you can get him at plus 600. Like, that's over on DraftKings, so that's a really pretty good number if you really believe he can do that.
Yeah, I have no doubt in his ability to be an elite defender. Let me just pull up my direct comparisons between JJJ and Mobley from last year, because I thought it was a much closer race than the voters ultimately decided. You know, Jackson, he was fairly, I thought, getting dinged for just his availability because he was fouling out so often. Mm-hmm. But you know, Mobley has had a more successful first two seasons than any of Jackson's first three. And really a lot of his career trajectory in 2022-23, this is Mobley I'm talking about, very, very, very similar pattern to what you saw from JJJ in 21-22. So if he continues on that and JJJ flattens out, then those two guys are 1-2 in the discussion, in my opinion. You know, yeah. Some of the other guys who were in the mix last year, Brooke Lopez, another year past. Giannis obviously is capable of being an elite defender, but it's somewhat unclear what he wants his regular season role to be. In terms of team defense and, you know, just in general with Budenholzer moving on, maybe the Bucks team defense overall takes a step back. And I guess if you're going to handicap the Defensive Player of the Year market, the one thing that you need to keep in the back of your head is that the voters really, really do put a premium on team defense being elite, right? If you are on a team that does not have a top five defensive rating, then you are not a realistic candidate, even if you are the most talented defender individually in the NBA. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's what ultimately could hurt the Anthony Davis campaign, although I think the Lakers will be a good defensive team. They're just big, which will just help, but it'll be interesting. I'm with you on Brooke Lopez, and then I'll ask, since we talked about Jaren Jackson Jr. and the other guy who's in this mix, obviously, I don't know, we didn't mention Bam Adebayo. Obviously an elite defender, but like those are two teams where I don't quite know what to make of Memphis this year. They're kind of a, you know, we call them a mystery box team in the preview. And I don't know what they're going to be. How do they respond to being without, why am I suddenly going blank on his name? They're a star player and I can't come up with his name.
So. John Morant.
Why? Yeah. I'm like, I got Mobley in my head and I couldn't get off Mobley. I'm like, that's not right. They got John Morant for the first 25 games. But I do like some of the, I do like bringing in Marcus Smart, not only because he fits defensively and can do some of the things Dylan Brooks did, but Dylan Brooks, I mean, having Marcus Smart there and having Derrick Rose there just as veterans in the locker room can maybe make this team more serious. I mean, I see them more as a team that comes together the second half of the season, but I don't, and could be a threat then. But they're just kind of hard to read because you're going to be in mid-December before you see them with their best player.
So this is the million-dollar question of the entire Western fabric, playoff seating and all of it, in my opinion. The Memphis Grizzlies on paper at full strength are absolutely in the conversation with the most talented and the deepest teams in the West. There's no question. They do have a little bit of a ding in that they don't have a superstar talent the likes of LeBron or
Curry,
specifically or Nikola Jokic or yeah. Curry. Like, yeah. So you get to the end stages of a playoff series, and it's not obvious to me what Memphis is going to do in terms of generating offense. You know, when things boil down to you just have to have a guy that can take over a game in game 5, 6, and 7 of a series, then I worry a bit about Memphis. But as a regular season team, and then maybe even as a regular season juggernaut, at full strength, these guys look unbelievably good on paper. Desmond Bane, I would expect to take another step forward. He is a rising star.
Yes.
Jaren Jackson Jr., similarly, if he continues on his progression, he's going to be a monster this year. If he just flattens out, he's going to be amazing. I do have, the questions, but the questions are swirling. You know, what do you get out of Marcus Smart in terms of leadership, in terms of offensive contributions?
Yeah.
What do you get out of Steven Adams? Is he ever going to be healthy again? And then some of the depth pieces like Luke Kennard, how many games are you asking him to start? Who are your backup bigs? Like, yes. You have this mix of guys who are all have shown flashes.
Aldama, yeah, you've got like guys I like, but
yeah, they've all shown flashes. I don't know. Any of those guys going to step up? But if they do, then all of a sudden you're this monstrous deep team. You're going to win a ton of regular season games. And then if John Morant is available for you in the playoffs, maybe he's your guy. He's your superstar that takes over games end to game. But it was pretty I was heavy Memphis last year against the Lakers in that series. And after game one, I pretty much ripped up my ticket. I knew it was over. Not just because the Lakers won, but how they won and the fact that, you know, they basically just said, okay, Ja, you want to try your acrobatic around the rim with Anthony Davis in the way? Then best of luck to you. And it was, you know, it just, he didn't have a plan B that worked. And so they need to grow and he needs to particularly develop some of his, his diversity in his game offensively, especially for them to succeed. But right now I would make the Grizzlies the clear number three. After the Nuggets and the Suns in the Western Conference in terms of regular season win expectancy. And so with that comes, the expectation that they're going to win their division. And I think that's a fair ask, even missing Morant until December.
It's a big number. Actually, are there some under overs you like? And I'll give you the one that jumped off the page when I saw it.
Sure.
Toronto over 36.5. I just don't think they're that bad. Like, they're not, they're weird. I don't know what's going on with OG Anunoby, all this. And that said, they're like a 500 or better team. Like, they're going to win games because they've got talent, even if I've got questions about where they're going long-term or the playoffs. I just think that number's too low.
Yeah, I think, let me pull up my number right now. My fair for Toronto is not close to the market.
Yeah.
So I'm with you in that one does stand out pretty clearly as a a win total over. What I guess, kind of taking a big, not big, but a small step backwards. When playing win totals, I guess it's pretty clear as you look at the numbers, there is a bunching of market expectation around 500. Okay, because it doesn't matter how you come about getting to your power number. The variance is such that, you know, you're going to win games you should lose, you're going to lose games you should win, blah, blah, blah. Like, teams tend to bunch around 500, or at least models and predictive models tend to point teams towards the middle class. Inevitably, some teams will overperform. They will get lucky. They will, they will have some hot stretches where, you know, they clearly outpace what expected win total will be, and they're going to overperform to the tune of 5, 6, 7 wins. And then the flip side, a team which is clearly out of it, and this was maybe more apparent in years past where there was active tanking, team that's out of the mix for a playoff spot, like the Jazz last year. Like, realistically, what should the Jazz have been? The Jazz finished with more losses than they should have because they basically took the entire last month of the season off and, you know, deactivated all their guys. Like, that sort of mentality that goes on at an organization level is going to make teams fall lower if they are going lower, right? So there is a tendency to misprice these totals by a larger margin than you're getting credit for if you sell off the key number. And so, for instance, if you drop down the Toronto Raptors options, their principal total is 36.5. It's -120 to the under, +100 to the over. That means you're laying $120 to win 100 if you want under. You're getting 100 for 100 if you want the over. My fair for them is 41 wins this year. So you can bet over 40.5 at +230, which kind of capitalizes on some of the potential upside, right? Yeah. You know, if you look at the Raptors as a team where young guys take a step forward, Schroeder is a perfect fit at point guard. Poeltl, well, the signal you got from Poeltl with these guys at the end of the season last year was real. Like, if you count all of that, then 41 all of a sudden doesn't feel like a sweat at all. And then the other side, if they have some injury bad luck, if, you know, they don't have the depth that we were expecting, and if the coaching is not as good in the absence of Nick Nurse, maybe then the under is pretty clear. But either way, you're taking a pretty high upside bet, in my opinion, if you're trying to get them into the 40 win range. And so the over 39.5 stands out to me at +185, and over 40.5 stands out to me at +230 as ways to kind of, if you're going to put your money to work for you over the balance of the season, go for the more ridiculous upside. And honestly, in this exact vein, if you're going to swing for the fences, do it in the East. The West is so good. And the East, somebody is going to step up into that 5, 6, 7, 8 range. And if you're picking teams like that, I would circle the Magic. I would circle the Raptors. I've even flirted with the Charlotte Hornets as a potential team that could kind of make their way into that 40-win range. I think if you're kind of on the bubble for the plan, you know, teams pushing for those wins late in the season to kind of jockey for the seeding in the play-in is going to be a real thing. You got a lot of teams that have young players that are expected to win now. There's no Wemby to tank for this year. Yeah. There's guys whose jobs are on the line if they don't start winning. So, you know, I think, you know, the Magic, the Hornets, the Raptors, those are the three I would swing for the fences on to the good. Hornets over 35.5 is +250. The Magic, the secret is out on the Magic, by the way. People,
the Magic are one of those teams where I think people are realizing they're actually going to be legitimately good this year.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a premium already built into the Magic. Just know that before you go look at the books right now. But I think those are the teams that I see that have, you know, realistic potential to surprise to the good in a relatively soft Eastern Conference. And I guess you agree with the framing there that the East is
definitely
weaker than the West. Yeah,
yeah. I think two things there. First off, I completely agree with the framing because the challenge with the West, and later this week I will have my my tiers out. You know, like just ranking them by. I'm using championship tiers, like contention, but it's playoffs or bust, whatever. Let's count this out. I bet 12 teams that expect to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Right? Like in the West, right?
In the West, right. Because, yeah. I mean, the Thunder are really good. The Pelicans, if they're healthy, are really good. There's the Clippers. The Timberwolves should take a step forward. The Kings are still good. Dallas, bad vibes coming out of Dallas, but they've still got Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. We talked about Memphis, Lakers, the Warriors. Like, it's just, it's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be hard for a team like the Jazz to take a step forward, where I'm with you, although I have my concerns about the Hornets on two fronts. I know you picked them, and look, I get why, because their number was deflated last year. They're much better with Lonzo Ball on the, LaMelo Ball on the floor. Miles Bridges isn't going to be with them now. Like, after this latest arrest, there's just, he shouldn't be and he won't be around the team. And there's a whole nother discussion about the league needing to be a little harsher on domestic violence, but that's for another day. The other concern I've got there, though, is just organizationally. You know, new owner, so you've got a coach and a GM kind of in a lame duck status. I just wonder if that starts to weigh on them a little bit. If that kind of organizational uncertainty costs them at some point.
Entirely possible.
Yeah.
I mean, in that vein, like I was saying, there are some, there's clear some organizations where winning is going to be a compulsory to keeping your job. And
yeah,
that organization, maybe it doesn't even really help you. It's because there's going to be some turnover regardless. But I look at the roster and I look at the team, and outside of, outside of Bridges, I mean, this is basically the team that won 43 games 2 years ago.
No, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, this is still
and now
a really
we're expecting
good team.
Them to win. We're asking them to win 31. Like, that does, it feels like a pretty significant.
If I'm with you that PJ Washington's ready for a step forward, and just we didn't get into this. We can discuss Rookie of the Year. I would not have taken Brandon Miller second, but
sure.
Brandon Miller's not bad, and he fits what they need in some ways. Like, he's going to forever be, it's going to be Trae Young and Luka Doncic, right? Like, they'll all forever be linked to Scoot in the draft. But Brandon Miller could be a really quality wing player that they can use too. Like, I think he can bring them value this year. So I'm with you. I think they're going to be better than their odds. What do you do with the West? What do you do with a team like the Lakers or the Warriors where, I mean, on paper, they're really pretty good, but I worry about them staying healthy enough. Is Anthony Davis going to play enough games at a high enough level? Is in the Warriors, it's so dependent on Steph Curry being Steph Curry and not taking a step back in what will be, I think he's 30, age 35, 36 season.
Yeah. So I agree with your commentary on there being 12 teams in the West who expect playoffs. And if you didn't already know the math, only 10 teams, including the play-in teams, get in.
Yeah.
And then of those, of course, only 8. And so, there are going to be 4 teams who are very disappointed with their outcome this year. They're going to have a tough time kind of communicating to the fan base what went wrong, considering the talent on these teams. I'm looking squarely at the likes of the Timberwolves. The Pelicans are falling into that mix. The Kings fall into that mix for me.
I think there's everybody's a little hesitant to say it because it was such a good story last year.
It was so good.
And I want to see them do well, but I don't see where they I saw them in person during preseason.
Yeah.
And my reaction was, it's the same Kings. They will be very good on offense. Even in the preseason, you're like, oh my God, their defense is just not good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stay flat, I'm not sure that that's good. And they also had incredible injury luck last year.
Incredible luck.
I'm worried about them taking a step back and
yeah,
I got to say, by the way, I got a lot of crap from Kings fans back when the trade happened that brought them Sabonis. I'm like, is a good short-term move. It will end your playoff drought, but I would rather have Tyrese Haliburton long-term and build that way. I fear this is the year that for those fans that that kind of thing comes to fruition, because we didn't talk about it, but I like the Pacers in the East too. I don't know.
Ooh, that's a nice hot take. Yeah, so I guess, you know, you can pretty clearly tier the West, in my opinion, where you have the teams that, you know, not expecting much is pretty clearly the Blazers are the lowest power rated team. And then I would put Spurs and Rockets on the next tier. So those three teams not realistically competing for a play-in. And then you have the teams that are going to disappoint. Putting the Mavericks in that conversation is fine with me. Putting the Timberwolves in that conversation is fine with me. Putting the Kings in that conversation and the Jazz in that conversation. Those are probably your four teams that are going to miss out. Pelicans, I would have on the, you know, on the cusp of that, just because of the potential for injuries, and just health. Clippers, I would put on the cusp of that. Just same kind of conversation. Player availability scares me. Everybody else, I think, is pretty clearly in the tier of, outside of a major injury, this team is going to be in the top six. The Lakers and the Warriors are probably the two highest profile of those two teams. And I think their win totals are probably set pretty fairly. Like, they're both sitting at 47.5 right now. And I want to be a little bit, I want to buy a bit on the Lakers at 47.5, and I want to sell a bit on the Warriors, but this is shades of gray here. I mean, I think the Lakers kind of coming in right around 48, 49 is what I expect with median projection for them. Warriors, I have them coming around 45, 46. And if Draymond Green was healthy to start the season and we knew we were going to get full production out of him, maybe I'd feel a little bit differently about the Warriors, but they're going to probably take 10, 12 games to sort of figure things out here at an extended preseason. And that could be enough to keep them under their total. But, you know, the Warriors, the Lakers, honestly the Thunder, all kind of in that middle class, they are clearly in the mix for a top six playoff seed. And then I have the top of the West clearly defined as Nuggets, Suns, Gap, Grizzlies, and then Gap and everybody else.
Let's talk about the Suns for a second. You've got them as contenders. You think that I let's put it this way, and I've struggled with this when I'm putting together those tiers. I right now have them as contenders, but they're a contender. I've got, look, I first off, regular season with Durant and Beal and Booker and the guys they're going to win a lot of games. I just my questions ultimately are depth and defense.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's going to matter. It might not matter until you're, you know, in the second round of the playoffs with them, because they've just got so much other talent. But I guess you've got to put them in that contender status.
Yeah. And it's weird to have any kind of degree of confidence with this, because we just haven't seen these guys play together that much in the regular season. But we haven't seen them play together at all in the regular season, but we really just haven't even seen them play that much. You know, we haven't even seen, you know, how Booker and Durant are going to comport each other, you know, how they'll complement each other over the balance of the full season. So there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the Suns, but I think if you are coming into this season with anything less than high confidence that this is going to be an elite offense, then you need to redo your numbers.
Exactly.
Because this is going to be this. If the Suns finish outside the top three in the NBA in terms of offensive efficiency this year, I'll be blown away. They fit together very well. In my opinion, at least, are going to be able to, you know, kind of complement each other on the floor in crunch time. Yeah. This is Beal, Booker, and Durant in particular. And I don't have a strong opinion about what Frank Vogel is going to get out of these guys defensively when it comes to playoff time. But this is a team that literally is just hold on for dear life. And hope that they don't score 30 on a given night if you are finding yourself matched up against them at full strength in the regular season. And then in the playoffs, it was funny too, because like they pretty clearly had no answer for Jokic in the playoffs last year.
Yes.
None. And getting Jusuf Nurkić was kind of a steal for that particular question, because, you know, maybe you only get 10, 15 minutes early in the game where you're making his life a little bit more difficult, but that might be enough.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I think this, I'm not saying the Suns ought to be priced, you know, kind of competitively with the, with the Nuggets for the one seed, because obviously the Nuggets have much, much more regular season home field advantage than the Phoenix does. And so I think that the pricing of Nuggets at the top of the West plus 260, Phoenix second choice plus 350, that's almost right on my numbers. I think that's just about perfect. The only price that looks way off in the West for me is Grizzlies at 13-1, because I think they have enough talent to be above the likes of the Lakers, Warriors, and Clippers. But it's a little bit of a tough thing to visualize the Memphis Grizzlies figuring things out in the playoffs the way that they looked last year against the Lakers. And you know, it's, you go back in time to the Curry, you know, Warriors when they finally broke through. And that came after, you know, kind of a humiliating round one defeat the year prior. So, you know, there's a little bit of parallel between this Grizzlies team and those Warriors that I may hang my hat on and end up just riding Grizzlies again this year. But this is probably my last ride with them if they don't get anything going. But yeah, I think Nuggets and Suns are pretty clearly your 1-2. And
yeah.
Suns, it's almost entirely because I believe in them having an elite offense, and that's about it.
Yeah, they do have that. And like I said, the questions I've got for them, I'm with you, by the way, on Nurkic. If you can get him to the postseason healthy, I don't know that we're ever going to see, you know, 2017 Nurkic again, the guy pre-compound leg fracture. He's just never moved the same way. But he doesn't really have to. Like you said, it's if he can bother Jokic a little, that's part of it. If they can get 15 or 20 a night out of him and then go to a secondary unit again during the regular season, they're just going to be so tough to stop that it's not going to matter. And then it's going to come down to, he can help them in certain matchups, and if he's moving better and can play, we know what Vogel wants to do. He wants to play a drop,
yeah, you
know, coverage. Maybe Nurkic can be that. He's certainly still a very big body, so
he's a big boy. Yeah, that's right.
On a philosophical level, do you like betting post like NBA awards, or is that is it just too random?
No way. NBA awards are a staple of regular season portfolio building, in my opinion. It's not random at all. Like, I guess here's the right, I'm not peppering the board preseason and then just crossing my fingers and hoping that something breaks my way. The awards markets actually are a pretty good way to get some liquidity down on some higher upside swings, kind of in the same vein as the all win totals I was talking about.
Yeah. Right?
Like, if you believe in a team having an especially, you know, a high variance to the good. Oh, here's a great example. There was one very, very, very clear awards market preseason bet you could make last year that one of the best bets I've made in my life. And it was Mike Brown, coach of the year for the Kings, because the signs were all there that the Kings were finally going to break through and probably make the playoffs, right? Like, at least the play-in. Like, they were chips on the table.
Yes.
We are not tanking for it. And, you know, this is it. Like, this is the year this all comes to fruition and we're going to make the playoffs. Snap the, whatever it was, 21, 25, I forget how many years the streak was that they hadn't had a playoff appearance, but they were
16.
Determined. It felt like 50, but it wasn't, I know.
Yeah.
So that the Mike Brown coach of the year was 50-1. And it just didn't square with the idea that this is a team that's going to be pushing at all costs for a playoff spot. And it just so happened to, you know, that they ended up way exceeding expectations, getting a 3 seed, and he was a runaway winner for that award market. And, you know, I definitely was kind of keeping an eye after I had my stake down preseason at 50-1. I was keeping an eye on that market throughout February, January, April, because a lot of times it's not how you start, it's how you finish. People that, you know, are, you know, subject to recency bias. And if you have an especially strong month of February and March, you can, you know, leapfrog other players who were better than you in, you know, October, yeah, November, December, or their coaches. And so I, you know, it was pretty clear, you know, I had to do some balancing and, you know, find other angles to make small bets to cover my potential, my EV there. But yeah, I think you kind of sit down, you draw it out on paper. These teams, you know, and I guess let's go with, let me see if I can come up with a good example, I guess. We talked about the Cavaliers and, you know, potentially winning the Central, right?
Right.
Plus 240 or whatever that price is. Well, if the Cavs do win the Central, if Mobley takes a step forward, you know, like you got to start to kind of game theory out. Like,
yeah,
if this happens, and, you know, the market is telling you that that has about a, you know, whatever, a 40% chance to happen or a 35% chance to happen, right? Well, if you fall into that part of the distribution, what else is possible now? What does that unlock? And does it unlock, you know, the likelihood that the team success bleeds into people believing Edmund Mobley deserves Defensive Player of the Year? Absolutely. Does it bleed into Most Improved Player, a player like Darius Garland? Absolutely. Right. Does it bleed into Bickerstaff Coach of the Year? Maybe. And, you know, the price for him right now is 16-1. So it's not quite as exciting as, you know, some of the other prices. But certainly if the Cavs steal a top two seed and beat the Bucks, they're going to be in the conversation. He'll be in the conversation. And you know, I think he tends to get a little bit of credit. You know, he tends to get the credit when things go well. And that might be, you know, just enough. The other one I want to kind of bring up, because we already talked about the potential positives to the good, Darko Rajakovic. Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe that is correct. Okay. Yes.
He is one of the biggest long shots on the board right now. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows if he'll be a good coach. Nobody knows if the Raptors are going to be good this year. But we already talked about they have like something in the ballpark of a 40% chance to win 40 games. And if they are clearly in the playoff picture, they are, you know, if they're not playing in, if they're a top six seed, which I think, you know, getting into the 40 wins, you know, puts them close enough that they may be, are people going to be talking about Darko Rajakovic as coach of the year? Because that's going to be a surprise, right? People will be surprised if the Toronto Raptors are, you know, kind of flirting with the top, you know, home court advantage in round one of the playoffs. So 45-1 for him for coach of the year is like, looks pretty obviously wrong to me. I think that should be in like 20-1 range, just because, again, like, if they're better than people think, the stories that will be written, the conversations that will be had, will be trying to figure out how and why, and ultimately he'll get a ton of that credit, I think. And I don't know, is there a reason to believe that Darko Rajakovic is a good coach?
Yeah, there is. I mean, people speak well of him, and knowing his stuff, but he's also seen as I thought this tipped their hand and then they didn't do it that way. He was always seen as a developmental guy. And if he's a developmental guy, then you're going to, oh no, we're going to hold on to OG and Siakam. So yeah, again, I'm not totally sure what the long-term plan is there, but I'm with you on the idea that he could sneak up on you. He could surprise people.
Yeah. So I guess there's the question is, would you rather have an even money bet that the Raptors win 36 games and, you know, if it clears that easily, would you rather pat yourself on the back and count your money in February? Or would you rather have a much higher upside ticket in your pocket for coach of the year, right? 45-1, you put that same $100 to work, you're talking about, you know, winning $4,500 here. So that's my general kind of way of attacking the awards market is I'll look for the stuff that, you know, if this happens and the market says it's this likely, then what trickles out of that could inform some of these awards bets. And then if there's some big prices to bet now, grab them now. And if there's if it makes sense to try to corner certain markets during the year when you have a false favorite, like, oh, I don't know, Russell Westbrook, sixth man of the year last year, Kurt?
Yes.
You remember that? You remember that month?
So close.
Oh my gosh. There was a month where he was like the odds on favorite for sixth man of the year. And it was like, wait a second, he got demoted to the bench and we're going to give him an award for it? No way the voters are going to vote for Westbrook. No. And then in the end, it wasn't even irrelevant. But, you know, it's that type of stuff, year in, year out, it materializes where you have moments during the regular season where there is a clear false favorite. And then you can really kind of fill out your portfolio with how you think things are going to go.
Yeah, I'm curious. I will tell you, the guy I just was looking up the odds on, because I'm – my early pick for most improved, which I, Cade Cunningham,
which Ooh, interesting,
because I think he looked really good in, at, USA Select camp. But I also think there's a certain level of, he was injured last year. We kind of, and he didn't really have a great first, was it 17 games or whatever it was before he got hurt. He didn't like make, but he, if he did get right and did use that year off and does come back and make a leap and makes the Pistons not horrific, they're not going to be good. But like if he's, if you start to see a path forward with him, then maybe he can do that and sneak past, I don't know. Jordan Poole is going to put up a ton of numbers, but is that most improved or is that really just going to be people going, yeah, he got an opportunity because he wasn't having to wait for Steph Curry to sit down.
That's right. That's right. I think there's a clear rubric for who wins most improved player, and it's first time All-Star. So before you bet anyone, you just have to go through the mental calculus of, is Cade Cunningham going to make the All-Star team? Because if he does, then he's probably already won it, so, right? Yeah. He's got enough. Yeah. There's enough of an anchoring that this guy is good. And if he makes the All-Star team, people will be like, well, there he goes. He's
all right,
clearly the most improved.
So we now know that Drew is picking Austin Reeves.
He's kind of a shorter shot than I would have guessed. He's already down to 14-1, yeah. So clearly somebody's been here and stomping on this.
It's that you got to factor in those Laker prices on everything, like anything Laker related. You do pay a premium on those. Are there any other preseason bets that you were kind of high on where you just were like, hey, this is something I kind of, or an area of that I think there's value out there?
Interesting. I think we've talked about my major macro thoughts.
Yeah.
I guess the story that I'm the most interested in and how it plays into the outright betting market is how the Boston Celtics deal with their big rotation.
Yes.
And how they keep Porzingis healthy, how they weave him into the fold. The advanced data would tell you that Porzingis was very, very good last year. And I think that's probably why the Celtics made the move they did. I think they probably needed to kind of, clear a path, I guess, also for Tatum to be the locker room leader by moving on from Smart.
Honest with you, I think they also thought they were selling high on Smart.
They probably were.
Not as young as you think, and that it may not be this season, but the decline is coming. Let's get out now.
It's not crazy. Yeah, and they had redundancy at the guard position, and the first deal that was floated was going to get rid of, rid them of Brogdon, who they really wanted to move off of for whatever reason, which spooks me from a medical question mark standpoint. But Porzingis had his best season as a pro last year, and it was by a lot. And he is now kind of in rare air in terms of the advanced stats. And so I think, if that works out, if he stays healthy, if they figure out the rotation of bigs and can kind of keep Horford healthy for a playoff push, then the Celtics are pretty clearly, in my opinion, the bet on in the East. And so I think, kind of thinking through them getting the one seed, what does that mean? If the Celtics are the home team in a series against the Bucks, what does that mean, right? If the Celtics are right now they're +130 to get the one seed. I think that's probably fair. But if they are the one seed, then all of a sudden the futures price is short on them at +180. So it's kind of that's kind of the key thing that I need to see from the Celtics. And I guess the other thing that it's worth noting. Joe Mazzulla, second time through the playoff run, right?
Yeah, and they put and got better assistance around him.
Better assistance around
him. Just they didn't get thrown together at the last minute, and now that Chip Van Gundy's there, everything's solved. So
I think people are probably saying that this weekend behind closed doors, but Joe Mazzulla in year two, I think you can expect a lot better from him in a, just sort of a playoff decision-making standpoint. Meanwhile, who knows what you're going to get with Adrian Griffin. I mean, presumably that's a good long-term hire, but is it, it doesn't exactly square with the team that's trying to win now, in my opinion. So
no, that was a keep Giannis happy move, but I will say again, after talking, seeing them, but like listening to him in his press conference, got asked about that. I did like his answer, which was essentially, I told them when they were in during the interview, like, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. Like, what we've got works. You're going to see a lot of the same actions. You're going to see some of the same coverage ideas. This team won 58 games last year. We're not, you know, we're not shaking everything up, which is a good sign, but we'll see how the players respond to him over the course of 82 and how he handled it.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me. So, yeah, I think just the fact that you have a little bit of coach, you know, the coaching continuity could help push the Celtics across the line.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy low at some point on the Celtics, or attempt to buy low at some point on the Celtics to win the East.
Waiting for that 5-game losing streak. And then,
just a little bit of like them coming out a little lackadaisical would be fine.
You're okay with that?
You remember last year, they were just electric to start the season. They looked unbeatable. Like, that made their prices basically unbettable for the rest of the year. and I think decent chance you get a little bit of the opposite side of the coin this year, where they don't have much to prove. Like, they let the season come to them. They know the Eastern Conference goes through Boston, I think. So, around Christmas is the buy point on the Celtics. But the Celtics are exciting to me in terms of what they can get to. And then the other side of the coin there is, like, I'm not seeing anywhere close to these prices being fair for the Heat. I think the Heat could slide out of the one seed in the Southeast. I'm not like calling for them to not make the playoffs, although I will be completely honest with you. I flirted with that price because it's a big number. It's
hard to bet against that happening just because the organization finds a way.
Exactly.
Every time, like, it's just,
you said it exactly. I literally did when I ran my numbers and I saw how close I have the Heat to the play-in, or like I have them in the play-in, I'll be honest with you. I think that's kind of their most likely outcome as they land in 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. 10. I think that's very reasonable. Yeah.
I did the math and I was like, oh man, like at the current price for them to miss the playoffs, you are sweating big time those playing games.
Yes.
Like you're almost giving a little more than half of it back trying to defend in those playing games, because the idea of like a Jimmy Butler Heat team losing to the Pacers in a one game winner take all doesn't feel great. So but I do think that the under is a good bet on Miami, and I do it's tough for me to square this because I'm not like especially fond of Quinn Snyder or Trae Young or
but
the Hawks at 2-1 to win the Southeast looks short.
Yeah, and I, whatever you think of Quinn Snyder, his teams perform in the regular season, and there are people around the league who are, I'm still hesitant, but there are people around the league who I trust who are much higher on them this year than I am. So, I'm not kidding. I put all my eggs in the Pacers are better than you think basket.
Well, it's a fun one.
They're going to be really fun, and I think they're one of those teams ready to make a leap. And Haliburton looked ready, but also I think he plays well off Miles Turner. And then they find Bruce Brown gives them a wing defender that they desperately needed, so we'll see.
Yeah their current win total is 38.5. If you think they surprised to the good to the tune of 41.5, then
yeah, that's what I was funny, I was just looking at that when you said that, and I pulled that up, I'm like, man, see, that's now you're suddenly looking at decent numbers. So
but yeah, plus 167, and there's a little bit of I would say Carlisle is well liked enough that 25-1 for coach of the year if that team surprises and is I guess what does Indiana have to do, what does the upside have to look like for Carlisle to beat out
that's
the
a good question
of, you know, a more feel-good story, I guess.
Yeah that's a good question, because Carlisle's liked and he's, I think, honestly, one of the best just pure X's and O's tacticians in the league. But we'll see.
So. Yeah. See, some of these guys at the top of the coach of the year market, I'm just like shaking my head. How in the world? How does Adrian Griffin win? How does Mazzulla win?
I get, yeah, exactly. The Dagnall, for people who don't know, Dagnall from the Thunder is first. And I think that's probably
that's fine.
That makes sense.
No objection.
You're right. But I think that somebody like Bickerstaff or Snyder or even Taylor Jenkins, because of everything they've got to overcome, sneaking up is possible.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, when you have a team that's expected to be excellent, like the Bucks and the Celtics, and expected to be very good, like the Heat, like basically you can put a line through those coaches and coach of the year, because they have to do an absurd over.
Yeah, it's got to be a 73. Yeah. It's got to be 73 win Warriors for you to, you know.
Yeah, right. I'll be fine going on the record. That's not happening this year.
You feel safe with that one?
Fine. It's fine saying that, yes.
There's some good teams out there. There are not the 2015? Whatever year that was, Warriors.
Yeah, the team with the most regular season wins this year, I would set the over-under at 63.5.
I'd go under that because I'm not sold the Bucks and Celtics are going to push hard enough out east, and the West is just like, even Denver's just going to lose too many games. The West is just too deep. Like, you can't have an off night in Minnesota. Teams are just too good. So
good point. Yeah, Bucks were the number one overall seed last year with only 58.
Yeah, 58. So if you put the number at 60, I'd still probably lean under. But if it's anything higher than that, I just don't see a team doing that this year.
2 years ago, the Suns got 64 in the regular season. That feels like a fever dream.
I forgot about that. That was
2 years prior. We can't really compare.
Yeah, that gets
Bucks
weird.
Got 60 when you go back to the 18-19 season. Yeah, so yeah, I guess 65 for the Rockets in 2017. I guess it's more rare than I realized. So I'm way over my highest. The highest regular season wins market should be around 59.5. I think you nailed it.
Yeah, probably it. So
yeah.
Drew, man, thank you for doing this. Where can everybody find your stuff? You're on Bet the Edge almost every morning, right? Or a lot of mornings on NBC talking about not only basketball, but also football, I think, is going on.
Football, yes. NFL season. You wouldn't know by the quality of play, but we are watching every game. and it has been, but it's been a successful year. We're winning some money every week so far, I think through 6 weeks. Our tips have won all six, which feels like maybe we got lucky, but it's been a good season so far this year. And yeah, Bet the Edge on NBC Sports, and either watch in YouTube format or download the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And as soon as we get into regular season NBA, we're going to have a lot more NBA coverage too, because even though it's an NFL focused show, both Jay and myself we're NBA hardcore bettors at heart, so we're gonna find a way to talk NBA regularly.
It's definitely something worth watching for bettors or people, frankly, who just want information. These Jay and you and the whole group of you have been on fire. In fact, I almost took Indiana under 6.5 last week on a suggestion from one of you, and would have lost on a trick play and just been pissed. So
classic.
So yeah, it would have been one of those bad beats I just would have been mad about for a week. So, all right, man, thank you, Drew, for doing this, everybody. We will be back later this week with Mark Medina, to talk again, just NBA preview stuff and talking a lot about the overcrowded West. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.